Good morning. My name is Laura. I'm a PhD student at the University of Georgia in the Department of Crop and Soil Sciences. Before I jump into the results part, there are a number of things I'm going to have to explain. It'll take a big chunk of the beginning just so that we know what the results mean. First, local effect of microorganisms. That's what a lot of my research has been focused on up until this point, and it plays a role in this data as well. I'll explain it in the next slide, but that's how I became involved, even looking at nematode populations and their changes and what that might tell us. I will spend a little while on nematodes just to make sure everybody's on the same page as we go through. First of all, you should all know what a nematode is before I tell you why their numbers matter. And also, a lot of people have some pretty strong ideas when they come into a room concerning nematodes. So then I'll just lay out the experiment. I do need to explain the indices that I'm using concerning all of my results are just presented not in terms of numbers or trophic groups in this research, but in these indices. So I'll explain those, and then I'll get into the results and our conclusions. I'll give you some cartoons this morning. LEM just stands for local effect of microorganisms. It's a homemade microbial inoculant. It's used in a lot of parts of the world. It's often applied to nutrient sources, so composts and manures and things like that that are applied to the fields. But a lot of times it's also just applied directly to the soils. And my research is focused on how applying LEM affects soil microbial communities and then nutrient cycling. And one of the ways we decided years ago to maybe start looking at those questions was analyzing nematode community structure. So I got pulled into this very large world of nematodes. First of all, what's a nematode? Very basically, it's a multicellular little bitty animal, microscopic, lives in the soil. A lot of people know what a nematode is, but usually when you say nematode at any kind of agricultural gathering, people cringe and growers hate them. It's true, there are a number of plant parasitic nematodes that can cause many millions of dollars of agricultural damage each year. And they can be a huge pest. There's a lot of issues with management. But the truth is, not all nematodes are parasites. Actually, not even nearly all nematodes in the soil are parasites. There's a large number of what are called free-living nematodes. So these are nematodes that feed on bacteria in the soil, fungi, each other. And so here we have just a couple examples from my samples of the plant parasites. There's a spiral nematode, ring nematode, stubby root nematode, also known as Helicotylenchus, Cricinomella, Trichodorus. Over here we have a few of the free livers, only known as Diptherophora, Mononchid, Alamus, Wilsonema. I think it's worth pointing out there are not even common names for free-living nematodes. So that's mostly because until recently, I think it is changing a little bit, but to growers or most people outside of ecology or academia, they're unknown or unnoticed or even irrelevant. But I think my point that I'm trying to make in this presentation is the free livers and nematodes in general, not irrelevant. So one of those reasons is they play an important role in nutrient cycling. I won't spend too much on that because I have to focus on the other reason they're not irrelevant for my research. But the reason for this is the grazers tend to have higher carbon to nitrogen ratios than the bacteria that they're eating. So this is a very simplified version of what's going on. But let's say the bacterial feeding nematode has a carbon to nitrogen ratio of 12 carbons to 1 nitrogen. If it eats 12 carbon units worth of the bacteria that it's feeding on, then it's really getting about 3 times more nitrogen that it needs to assimilate that carbon. So it releases, you know, the extra 2 units, 20 grams, whatever example you're using, into the soil as ammonium, which is plant available, and it's a really nice way of cycling those nutrients that sometimes get tied up in the bacteria and the fungi. Another reason that they're important and relevant, I think, to growers and ecologists, and as we're talking about soil health, is their diversity. They have an immense diversity in the soil. The range of species, families, lifestyles, trophic levels, so their feeding habits, their developmental habits, their reproductive habits. They occupy just about every niche in a soil food web and ecology. And so if you take all of the free living and plant parasites and just nematodes as a group of organisms, I think they're really uniquely suited for indicators of overall soil condition or health. Another thing that's nice is, I say this, they're relatively easy to extract and identify. I've had a time over the years learning how to identify them, but as far as just cost, you use a sugar solution and a centrifuge and some seeds, and then for identification, it is a little rough, learning the ID techniques, but you just need a microscope and to know some basic anatomy and get a good understanding of them. These are just a few of the indices that I'm going to be presenting. There are more than these out there that have been developed by nematologists and ecologists for using nematodes as indicators. A lot of these were developed to look at disturbance sites or even pollution sites. They're used sometimes for remediation documentation to see how soil ecosystems are evolving after some sort of major disturbance. So the first group, these are all different types of maturity indices. So a maturity index, that's basically a measure of disturbance or enrichment of the soil. So the lower values are going to indicate higher disturbance, higher enrichment, lower maturity or kind of stabilization of those ecosystems. So this is, the MI stands for the maturity index that incorporates just the free livers. The MI15 incorporates the free livers and the plant parasitic, and it's just a way of grouping it out and doing different calculations with those same numbers. And then the PPI is still a maturity index. It's not a number, it's a weighted average, but only of those plant parasitic nematodes. And then there's a structure index, which is similar, but if we have time or if you want to ask me about it, I can explain why they're not exactly. It's not just a weighted average. It incorporates trophic group levels and some other constants that have been developed by these ecologists, but it indicates food web complexity, so the structure of and the stabilization of those ecosystems. An enrichment index is an indicator of the resources that have been put into that ecosystem. This is just an example. This is a table from one of Tom Bonger's papers. He's one of the big developers of these indices. And the way that they all work is assigning a CP value to the families of the nematodes. So these are soil and freshwater nematodes. Next to each family, there's a CP value. So if you have any kind of ecological background, CP is colonizer persister, but it's very related to kind of R strategist, K strategist. So a colonizer value would be the lower ones, and it's going to be those organisms that come in, take advantage of anything that's been put into the soil, can really rapidly reproduce. They have high fecundity, really short life cycles. And then the P values are going to be the higher ones, and that's going to be longer life cycles, slower reproduction. They tend to be higher on the food chain, not always. But so like Mononchid here is a predator, so it tends to have a higher P value. It requires not just a flush of bacteria, but a developed food web to have established. So this is just an example of how I did my research. These are some of the main families that I see in my samples over and over. And then I have, a couple of my nematodes here. This is a Mononchid. It has a CP value of 4, so that's higher. If there are any nematologists out there that specialize in free-living taxa, forgive me. I was looking at my presentation yesterday, and I misclassified that. It's actually a Wilsonema, which is Lectidae, but it's the same value, so it's okay. So our experiment is set up in a field plot in Watkinsville, Georgia. All of our plots are 20 by 20-foot plots, and they're split down the middle. This is our third year on those plots, so the first 2 years, each side of those two split plots received a different set of rotation and management. So on this side, we had ryegrass in the winter. On the left, we had cereal rye planted. In the summer, when we planted that side in soy, we left the other side fallow, and then that same rotation was repeated for the second year. And then in the third year, in the winter, we planted wheat across both sides, all the plots. In the summer, soybean was planted across both sides, all the plots, and it's in year 3 that I collected the data for this presentation. As I mentioned, LEM before, that's another part of our management that we're looking into, so both the systems, which are those two different sides, and then the LEM application. So among our plots, we have random distribution. There's 4 repetitions of the LEM plots, 4 repetitions of an FLEM, which is just a type of control that we have where it's the inoculant formula without the actual inoculant in it, but it has all the sugars and things like that, and then control plots that don't receive any LEM or FLEM. This is just a quick summary so you can get an idea of the amount of nutrients that were applied to each side. It's also a good point to mention we added in bear control plots for this third year. So these are portions of the same field area, but that had not been planted in anything over the first 2 years. They were just left fallow, and they never received any kind of nutrient or inoculant input. And then the third year, they were planted the same in wheat and then in soy. The way I broke it down, so first we look at what these indices did when I sampled in terms of the treatments. So this is all from our wheat plots in the winter, and this is going to be that ryegrass fallow system side on the left that we saw first, and then looking at the indices between the different treatments. So as you can see, there's not a whole lot of significant difference between those treatments on the ryegrass fallow side. There is, you'll see in a number of these tables, there's a plant parasitic index, maturity index difference. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this here. I looked into my data and figured out why those numbers were different, and it's not irrelevant, but it's not super relevant to what we're talking about. And it doesn't really mean higher plant parasites. It's just a different kind of organization of those colonizer persisters within the plant parasitic community. In the cereal rice soy system on the other side, so we're same period of sampling, we saw, you know, the plant parasitic index difference. We also saw an increase in the LEM plots. They did have higher structure index, so the plots that received LEM on that side did show a higher structure index. This is the same breakdown, but just sampling from that other side that had been under the cereal rice soy rotation. No real significance in our, I'm sorry, that it was all planted in soy in the summertime. No real difference in the ryegrass fallow side in any of the indices. And we did see the LEM side again actually came out a little on top for the structure index. I also looked at the system comparison. So this is regardless of treatment, we're just comparing one side to the other when we took samples in the winter, and then one side to the other when we took samples in the summer. There are a lot of differences in this one, is where most of the story ends up coming out. The maturity indices, the ryegrass fallow side and the bear control, both had higher maturity index values than the soy ryegrass. It also, in the winter, it had higher structural, these same two had higher structure index and Shannon's diversity index than the soy cereal rye. If you go down in the summer, so when we sampled in the summer with the soy, really similar. So the bear control had the highest, and then the ryegrass fallow, and then again the lowest came out being that soy, cereal rye soy. The structure index again proved to be higher in the bear control ryegrass, and in both seasons sampled, the ryegrass fallow and the cereal soy were higher than those bear controls that had no, you know, fertilizer input. So over here, I have a quick tally of what I'm calling disturbance and enrichment of all those different system plots. So overall number of tillage over the 3 years, and the cereal rye soy had the largest disturbance, the largest number of tillage. It also ended up having those lower maturity index values, the lower structure index values repeatedly. They also had 20% higher nitrogen input, and I think it's really telling the bear control, which had no kind of nutrient input, even though it was showing higher maturity and structural values than the cereal rye, which was disturbed, and soy system, it consistently had a lower enrichment index value. So sum it up really quickly. This is kind of what I just said, so I'll go through it really quick. Among the cereal rye soy system soils, the plots that received LEM had higher structural index values. I just pointed out that there were no yield differences. In the winter, between the system comparison, these are just how it broke down. I just went over that, so I'll try to leave a couple minutes for questions instead of re-going over all of these things. But in conclusion, we did find that the higher disturbance and enrichment was reflected in these indices. So looking at the indices and how they break down and how they summarize based on looking at how much disturbance and how much enrichment was going on, we didn't see a huge difference in these inoculant treatments, but in the systems, they kind of repeatedly, even only after a couple of years of treatment, you could see a difference in the ecosystems of these nematodes, which is exciting. Fertilization as well was also reflected, and then among the highest disturbed plots, which were those soy cereal rye plots, that is where we did see a little bit of difference when applying the inoculant to those nematodes. So many thanks to my lab and my professor, and then my nematologist support system here that have been helping me out through the years. So thank you.